Over the years, County Clare has developed a culture of tourism and attractions. As a county, our tourist offering has improved significantly and now ranks head and shoulders above the rest of Ireland and is among the very best in the world. However, it wasn't always like this. We didn't have an international airport, heritage attractions, and a town to support development and enterprise. But one man changed the direction of a county and a country. Old rundown castles were restored to greatness. He revived medieval attractions. Ireland's first town in over 100 years was erected. And perhaps one of the greatest discoveries was duty-free shopping. As I stand here in the heart of the duty-free shopping area of Shannon Airport, the man that created all of these structures and so much more was Brendan O'Regan. The traditional saying is, where Clare leads, Ireland follows. However, where Brendan O'Regan led, the world followed. Welcome to our tribute documentary, Innovator.
The outstanding man of all the Clare people was Brendan O'Regan.
If you ask me who was Ireland's greatest person, I'd put him number one. He inspired me, there's no doubt in my mind about that.
He was dealing with business at an international level. It was all designed to be reflected in the development of local employment.
Six Mile Bridge is known for its rich agricultural heritage, the GAA, and the hometown of the O'Regan family. James O'Regan was originally from the bridge. He married Nora Ryan from Kilrush. Together they had seven children, Moira, Jenny, Patrick, Seamus, Brendan, Peggy, and Josette, with Andrew Brendan born in 1917. However, he was always known as Brendan, because of St. Brendan the Navigator feast day. From an early age, Brendan was exposed to life beyond Clare by his father.
My father was, for most of the period of my early years, he was very active in Clare County Council and was the chairman of it during the vital years before the Rising. And he was a very ambitious man for Ireland, brought me as a very young man to the continent.
The exposure to different countries from an early age helped expose Brendan to different cultures, and this set him up for a life of futuristic innovation.
I changed my view as to what to do, but by having gone abroad to Germany and to England and Switzerland, has had a big effect on my thinking.
In 2018, a beautifully designed book was released. It looked back on the extraordinary achievements of Brendan O'Regan. The title of the publication is Irish Innovator, Visionary and Peacemaker. Its author is Brian O'Connell. Brian remembers O'Regan's school days.
Brendan went to Black Rock College at the start of secondary school. He was there for 5 years. And in the school, he was a reasonably good pupil. He found when he arrived in Black Rock that the primary school training he had got in the primary school in Six Mile Bridge, the national school in Six Mile Bridge, was a lot better than the background training the guys in Black Rock had gone. And he was moved up a rank fairly quickly into the top stream.
Kian O'Carroll is a former senior executive of Shannon Development, and was also a long-term colleague of Brendan O'Regan. Both Kian and Brian remember Brendan's academic achievements.
He was a very good sportsman. He was highly praised for his academic and sporting achievements.
He took a lot of initiatives while he was in Black Rock. Obviously, famously, he persuaded the president of Black Rock at the time, which was John Charles McQuaid, to allow hurling be played competitively in the school again.
They were very successful in the hurling, and he was a very determined sportsman.
They entered the Leinster Junior Hurling Championship and they won it in 1933. And as part of a team that he was on, they won the Senior Leinster Colleges Championship in 1935.
Brendan's career started to blossom. His first step into hotel management was at the Falls Hotel in Estimon. This was followed by a management role in the Stephen's Green Club in Dublin.
A number of the Stephen's Green Club people asked me, when the place closed down in winter, will you come and help us to improve. And I was only there for about 6 months. I succeeded in improving the LSD as well as the meal, but I was a very hard worker.
Many years later, he married Rita Barrow from Preston, Lancashire. Together, they had 5 children, with Carmel as the firstborn.
He was never too busy to be, as far as I was concerned, the best dad in the world. I think Mum helped him in that he never really had to worry about anything at home. That was very much her bailiwick, her responsibility, and she looked after, I suspect she looked after all the household bills and all that sort of thing, which quite often might be shared in another marriage.
From Carmel to Declan.
Good father.
Great to be with, great storyteller. When I was young in Ennis, when you couldn't get to sleep, he'd come in and tell you a story. The big problem was, when you wanted to tell you the story the next time, he didn't remember the story he told you. So he started, and by the time you got interested, you were asleep, but you wanted the story to, you never knew what the finish was because you didn't stay awake long enough.
After Declan, Geraldine arrived.
He always spoke of his own mother in terms of high regard and endearment. And I believe his kindness and ability to love deeply was learned, you know, from his mother. He often quoted her saying, love is all that matters. And that's something he believed in as well. So, and we definitely saw, you know, that love between himself and my mother. So he was a great example for us.
A few years after Geraldine, the twins arrived, Margaret and Andrew. Andrew recalls hearing a story about his father winning a bike race in Six Mile Bridge.
Apparently there was some kind of bike race going on. It was a senior bike race for men. And some older buddy put him up to getting involved in the race as well. And he said the bike was pretty much too big for me. So it went out past the old house, back across fields, back around and came in the road down the hill from the back. The person who put him up to it said, well, what you can do is cut across the fields at X, you'll be well ahead of everybody. He said he did this and he said, I only just made it. I got out on the road in front of the leaders of the other lot and came shooting down the hill and was immediately cheered and picked up and put on shoulders. Of course, he knew he was in deep, deep trouble on this. Like, he had just made the wrong move at the wrong time. And James, his father, came out and quickly kind of put two and two together and seems to have really tore into him. And that kind of reflected James's view of the world and James's view of honesty and truthfulness and the importance of that and the importance of your standing in your community and the fact that your word could be relied on in that sense.
From Andrew to his twin sister Margaret. She recalls the O'Regan family moving to Killaloe and the importance of keeping a Clare address.
We moved from Ennis when I was around 8 or 9. The house was on the county tip side of the river, but we were looking across the river at Clare. The way it worked out, the post office was in Killaloe on the Clare side. So officially, we were able to maintain a Clare address. Our postal address was Killaloe, County Clare. Sometimes I think he would not have bought that house if he could not have had a Clare address with that house.
Many years before the O'Regan children were born, Brendan started to work in the Old Ground Hotel. However, Brendan's father, James, initially set it up as a Fiat garage.
He had gone to Italy and he had gone to Turin and he had come back with the agency for the Fiat car in Six Mile Bridge. When Turin discovered that he was living in a small place like Six Mile Bridge, they told him that he'd have to move to the capital if he wanted to retain the agency. So he moved to Ennis to buy a garage and he bought the bones of the Old Ground Hotel for £1,200 and built a garage onto it.
I think that what drove my father was him having to take over the business as a young man after Dunkirk, when the guarantees that his father had given to the bank were worthless and the bank sold off the shares in the British blue chip companies as they were then. And my father had to take over the debts of my grandfather. And he had to pay back the money. It had a lasting effect on my father. he was always going to succeed because he had a fantastic brain.
James always had an idea in his mind that running a hotel might be something that he'd want to do. I suspect sometimes that that might have been something to do with finding something that would be a place where all the family could have support and employment and so on. But to such an extent that in the old house in Six Mile Bridge, up at the top of the stairs, he had one arrow pointing to rooms, whatever it was, 1, 2, 3, and another to rooms 7, 8, 9, 10, which didn't, of course, exist at all.
The hotel was a great gathering spot for the extended family, especially over the Christmas holidays. It was always very exciting. I mean, sometimes they were visiting stars over the holidays. I remember one Christmas, Richard Harris came to stay with his family. Richard Harris's sister, Harmy, was married to Jack Donnelly, who was the manager of the Old Grand at the time.
From Ennis to the village of Foynes, which is situated on the Shannon estuary, and was one of the biggest civilian airports in Europe during World War II. It was a place from which the first transatlantic flights were operated by Pan Am. Margaret O'Shaughnessy is the managing director of Foynes Flying Boat Museum.
The movers and shakers in the whole aviation business was Pan American Airlines, and one trip wanted to fly the Atlantic. So he sent Lindbergh to survey, and Lindbergh surveyed Galway, Cork, the Shannon region, we'll say the Shannon estuary, Rhinanna, and all of that. And he made his submissions that it would be Rhinanna, but there was too much work to be done. And it all had to be drained and everything done there. It was marshy. So they decided they'd look for an alternative. And the alternative was straight across the river in Foynes, because we were a commercial port. We had a lot of facilities they needed. We had a sheltered harbour. We had all the major oil companies were already there importing oil. We had a railway line. We had a bus service, you know. So that brought all that into view. So Foynes was to be a temporary hub for flying boats, but of course we were the only hub. There was a big basin got ready in Rhinanna, or Shannon now as it's called, but it was never used. So the first flights came in to us in 1937, trial flights from America, and they were done by Pan American Airlines and Imperial Airways, which later became BOAC and now British Airways. And then by 39 we were off, and the passengers, first passenger flight came in. Now, it was breaking real new ground, aviation and crossing the Atlantic. I mean, before that was just a ship and you were weeks. The British BOAC became the handlers at the airport as well as being an airline. And this is what makes it extraordinary. They decided they needed somebody titled to be welcoming. You see, your passengers were very different. There were VIPs, royalty, movie stars, because the war broke out straight after Foynes starting. Foynes started July 39 for passengers, and we had the war in September. So everybody coming through was screened and was everything. So, I mean, you had all these Bob Hope, Yehudi Menuhin, Eleanor Roosevelt, I'm just Gracie Fields, all these people. So they needed a restaurant.
At 26 years of age, Brendan's wings started to spread as his next career move was into Foynes.
There was nobody interviewed against me. I heard afterwards that Mr. De Valera had written on a file after he had visited it and had a meal in the restaurant run by the British Imperial Airways. Surely we should be running the restaurant. And that was an instruction from the top. I got the appointment. I think I was offered $1,000 a year. And 25% of the profits thereafter. That last one was became an embarrassment, and I gave it up. I think reduced it to 2 or 3% of the profits. Really didn't want it, because I was animated by the challenge of the job.
Brendan's attention to detail was limitless. One phrase he often used was "eye appeal." It was this expression that pushed Chef Joe Sheridan to create the Irish coffee.
The pilot made a decision to come back and wait for better weather. And when that would happen, the airport would have to go back into full working mode. And I can tell you how that was, because it was my grandfather, Milo McMahon, who was implied by the airport, and his horse was implied. They had no phones, one phone in the airport, one in the post office. So he'd know where everybody was lodging. No hotels, no guest houses, no B&Bs. So he'd go out on horseback and call him in and tell him they had to come back into work. for this flight coming back. And Lel Dowley was the ground hostess, and she was bringing them in off the boat, and they were frozen and they were tired, and they were. And she said to Joe, do give him coffee, give him something special. He just put the whiskey into it and gave it out to them, and one of them did say to him, that's fantastic, what is it? It was a Brazilian coffee you used. And Joe, being smart, said, no, it was Irish coffee, meaning the coffee he used. And that was it. And then he remembered about Brendan and the eye appeal, so a few days later he put it into a glass, and he went down, he knocked on Brendan's door, and he said, boss, how about that for eye appeal? And Brendan said to him, that's genius, chef.
By now, the war had finished and land planes were making aviation advancements, which meant traffic flying into Foynes started to reduce.
Foynes was fairly short-lived in its success, because the flying boat became obsolete and there was a transfer over to the propeller aircraft. So the government had been very enterprising, and the civil servants like John Layton and T.J. O'Driscoll, they had a very good approach, and they negotiated good deals internationally. So the idea originally was in Shannon that they would have the flying boat landing place, which is the obsolete lagoon, which you can see, and that they would have runways as well. So over a period of time, the whole operation moved over from Foynes to Shannon.
Plan was to have a single Shannon airport with two terminals. One was Foynes, which would have been flying boats only, and the other one was Rhinana, which was selected partly because there was a perfect flying boat base in the water, but it was never put into use. And instead, the land terminal there was developed. They reclaimed land, they put up protections against the sea and the flooding. And basically, there was huge numbers of people employed in building that, completed just in time for the fact that during the war, the airline companies had learned how to use land planes for transatlantic travel.
Brendan O'Regan's influence on aviation in the Midwest should always be remembered as the man that changed the course of aviation history. In 1950, he travelled to the United States for 6 weeks as part of the Marshall Aid Plan. It was on this journey O'Regan had his greatest vision: duty-free shopping.
There was a shop on the SS America which was selling a number of items which were free of duty because they were selling it on the high seas.
So he then set it upon himself that he was going to try and persuade the Irish government to do this. The Marshall Aid people, of course, were fully supportive of the same idea. Eventually, the message got through to the Taoiseach at the time, was John A. Costello, and he eventually wrote a memorandum to Cabinet saying, look, it might be an idea to use the status of Shannon, which was introduced in the 1947 Act, but which did not allow things like selling of duty-free goods, because that would upset merchants in Limerick and Ennis, as Lamass said in the Dáil debates at the time. Once that go-ahead was given by the Cabinet in, I think it was June 1950, this is only about 4 months after O'Regan had come back from the trip. It took about another 8 months before it happened, because the customs authorities were very conscious that there might be a lot of people. There might be a lot of goods leaking out of the place. There might be people taking advantage of the fact that the goods were duty-free, and therefore they were worth an awful lot more outside of the airport. So eventually the first shop opened, and they were very careful about anything being spilt, or if a bottle was broken, they had to call in the customs and sweep it all up and pay duty on it.
It was only a matter of time before O'Regan's greatest creation of duty-free shopping was replicated around the world. One city that adopted the duty-free model was located far from the shores of County Clare and is situated on the Persian Gulf coast of the United Arab Emirates. It is Dubai. Colin McLaughlin worked in Shannon Airport for a number of years and is currently the Executive Vice Chairman and CEO of Dubai Duty Free.
I was interviewed at Shannon Airport by Bill Maloney, who was the boss of the Duty Free at that time, and the boss of Shannon Airport at that time, called J.G. Ryan. And I was offered a job there, and I went to the job 1st of June 1969. That's 54 years ago. And I started work there, and I was introduced then and brought to see Dr. Brendan O'Regan perhaps a week or so after that. Well, of course, it was frightening to meet people that had such a big reputation. But my first impression that he was very cordial, he was very welcoming to me. I did not know at that time that he was responsible for so many things. I just learned that as I went along. My first impression was that he was very normal, very amiable, and I was very sort of happy to have the feeling that I was going to be working for a man like that. Everybody was conscious, and of course still is, that it was the first duty-free operation in the world when it opened. The people here at Dubai Airport had heard that the first duty-free in the world at an airport was at Shannon Airport. And because of that, they made contact with what is now described as Air Inter. At that time was the Shannon, just the Shannon Airport. And because of discussions that happened, a team of 10 people, there was a contract done between Dubai Airport and Air Inter, and a team of 10 people came to Dubai to set up a duty-free at Dubai Airport. I was one of that 10 people. I was the kind of commercial person in that. But our team was led by a man from Shannon Airport called Michael Hanrahan, who was the finance man at Shannon Airport that time. And my first impression was sort of frightening. We didn't know where we were, and everybody was wearing abayas, which are the clothing to wear in this thing. And there was no bus service. It was a very small place. It was a very small airport. We had a very difficult job and long serving hours during that 6 months to set up duty free. But the attitude even that time was very positive. This is going to be the best. This is going to be the biggest. And that has proven to be correct. And of course, it is still the attitude in Dubai. Dubai duty free was born in 1983. Emirates Airlines was born in 1985. The population in the early days was 250,000 people. It has grown to be the present population of about 3.5 million. The airport has grown from a traffic of 4 million people in 1984 to the traffic now in 2019, it was 89 million people. The duty-free business has grown from the first year in the Dubai duty-free business, the sales were $20 million. In 2019, the sales at Dubai Duty Free was $2 billion and will surpass that this year. And the duty free industry around the world now is a huge, huge organization. It's worth $90 billion. That is all Dr. Brendan O'Regan. The airport has grown and grown and grown. The duty free industry around the world has grown, like I just said. That's all a little, in my view, a little bit of the legacy of Dr. Brendan O'Regan.
Brendan was one of the greatest entrepreneurs Ireland has ever produced. Supporting him in all his endeavours was his wife Rita, as Geraldine recalls.
She was beautiful and quite elegant to start with. That was the obvious. But she was also very competent and a great hostess, which was an important part of the networking that Dad did. You know, they both became friends with a lot of the people he was forming partnerships with related to, say, restorations of castles, for example. You know, and so a lot of people were hosted in our home over the years. But it really was a true love match. I think we were very, very fortunate to find each other. And it was a love that lasted their entire married life together.
Family time was important for the O'Regans, as Carmel, Declan, Geraldine, Margaret and Andrew remember their special memories of their father growing up.
We originally lived in Ennis, in Harmony Row, and then and that was actually part and parcel of the old ground, really, because the staff of the old ground lived upstairs and we lived downstairs in just one apartment, as it were. And then we moved to a house called Coravine in Lifford Road. Well, my earliest memories, when it was kind of just me, even though he was must have been at the height of his career at that stage. I think he and Mum worked very much as a team. Sort of have a memory of always being in my pajamas, staying up at night to and not going to bed until I had a chance to say goodnight to Dad.
They were good. There was a lot of freedom back then. When we lived in Lifford, you could go out in the morning and come back at lunchtime and then go out again and come back at tea time. But they were good. You could do a lot more. There was a lot more freedom, and we had a lot more freedom.
Family mealtimes were very noisy affairs, right? And as the children grew older, we were all competing for attention and getting our 2 cents worth in at the table. So it certainly wasn't a time for, he didn't discuss kind of work in those times with us. But he would take the opportunity to have special times with each one of us, you know, as time allowed.
There was always an element of excitement with him. There was, because he was able to push things a little bit. And another trip brought us down the estuary as far as Kilrush. The boat was a 22 foot and we had a spinnaker on it. We'd never used the spinnaker. Dad had no experience with the spinnaker. But he decided to try it with a stiff wind coming behind us. I remember the surge of power as that sail filled with air, and I thought we were about to take off, and that spinnaker got taken down really fast. The commands were there, get that thing down. The thing was, he had a lot of gumption, and we learned a lot through trial and error. It was an exciting time.
Doors just got opened for him, literally and figuratively, in various ways. I remember him talking to me about while working in Shannon, daily seeing the grief of parents and siblings as they said goodbye to family members, not really expecting to see them again in any meaningful way.
Work continued at breakneck speed for Brendan. His next project was to closely examine the training needs for staff. He did this by creating an important training link with Switzerland, as Brian O'Connell recalls.
He felt training was the future because he felt that if we wanted to create a tourism industry in Ireland, the biggest thing we were lacking was trained hotel managers with the right attitude. In other words, with the right attitude towards the customers and with the right sense of what customers from other countries might require. And the proper training in the best and the newest techniques, and with a standard of excellence built in from their training. So to achieve this, he established a very special relationship with Switzerland, because at the time, and still today, the top ranking hotel school in the world is in Lausanne, Ecole Hotelier de Lausanne, EHL. And Brendan went over there, and he was going to set up, he had already established formal training within his own network that was running the catering operation, Shannon Catering, that was running the catering operation in the airport, which was the biggest single catering operation in the country. He went to Lausanne and persuaded one of the senior people from Lausanne to come over and look at what they had and to set out courses and things they might do to better train their own staff, and to what they might do then to encourage other people to come and attend this new school he was setting up, which happened in early 1951. From that, there was then extensive use of exchanges where, as part of the training, people who were in the hotel school in Shannon would be sent to hotel schools in Switzerland and other countries on the continent, Germany, Britain, France. Therefore, he wanted to create an Irish hotel industry, a service which would have a distinctive flavour of its own.
Today, training is essential for the development of staff. However, back in 1951, this was groundbreaking. Brendan O'Regan created the first hotel management college in Europe. It was situated at Shannon Airport. For over 30 years, Dr. Philip Smith was head of Shannon College of Hotel Management.
He was short of quality staff. He had studied in the hotel college in Lausanne in Switzerland before the war, so he had this idea of founding a hotel school. And he went to government with the idea because, from what we know about him, he was very good at going to government. He always went to the top and in many cases got what he wanted. But he said he wanted to found a hotel school and he wanted support. And he was refused. And he told me himself about a letter which I think still exists, a letter where an official said that there were not jobs for 12 qualified hotel managers in Ireland. And I always have a vision of an official sitting in an office somewhere in Dublin and checking maybe the list of hotels in Ireland and saying Partners Cilla, the Hibernian, the Shelburne, Ireland is not enough, we don't need trains, we don't need people for those. Despite the pushback, he went ahead. He recruited a class, approximately 15 or 16 boys and girls, young men and young women, and they came in on a two-year program. And very quickly that developed into a four-year program. In fact, it may have developed into a four-year program even for that group. They obviously worked in the kitchens and restaurants in the airport before they joined to see were they suitable, and that lasted for a good number of years. And then they came in and they would have done an awful lot of work. A lot of their training would have been in the kitchens and restaurants in the airport, as well as their academic training and so on. So they were really, I think, in those early days embedded in the airport. So they would have known all the characters that were in the airport at the time.
Meanwhile, back at Shannon Airport, Brendan was introduced to long-term colleague Liam Skelly.
I met him in the mid-50s, either 54 or 5. I worked as a civil servant in the Comptroller and Auditor General's office. The Comptroller and Auditor General's work was to audit all the accounts of the departments in Ireland, like Foreign Affairs and all that, and some semi-state companies like Bordamona and Aer Lingus at the start. One of the places then that we audited was Shannon. When I left, the Comptroller and Auditor General continued to do the audit, and Brendan O'Regan always asked me would I meet the auditors and take out the auditors and entertain them. So it's like, as if he was a really clever man, and he said, I'll get one of their own to do my job. But I found him an excellent man. So then he asked me, he had the Old Ground Hotel, and he asked me would I come on the board of the Old Ground Hotel with him and for him. And I remember he had a manager at the time, Jackie Donnelly, who was a very nice, very good manager. And we used to go over there and I'd often stay at weekends and be dining and wining. It was lovely. And Brendan was so, I enjoyed my life with Brendan O'Regan.
As Brendan O'Regan's Shannon Airport was taking shape and expanding, he realised our tourist offering in Clare also needed to expand and offer more for incoming tourists. Carmel and Andrew remember being brought around to derelict sites.
We were taken off with Dad, where he was meeting a large group, I felt like a large group to me anyway, of Americans. I think they were travel writers. And we went to Quinn Abbey. And I remember, going around Quinn Abbey with them. And then afterwards, we went back to one of the local pubs. I remember it very well, because subsequently, these travel writers put together what was an insert for an American magazine promoting Ireland.
I certainly remember and being brought off to see sites at Corrafin, the sites at Ballyvaughan, where Rent an Irish Cottage might be, and so on. So anything that could be made into a family trip and couple it with work.
The development of tourist attractions in Clare started to expand, and one of the initiatives was the banquets in Bunratty Castle and Folk Park, as Cian O'Connell recalls.
Medieval banquets were seen as a real effort to try and bring back tourist business to Shannon. And the first banquet was done by staff, girls from the typing pool were drafted in and dressed up to sing at the banquet, and Chef Ryan provided the food and so on. So it was quite an amateur effort, and then of course it became quite professional.
Cian O'Carroll speaking there about the banquets in Bunratty Castle and Folk Park that celebrates its 60th anniversary this year. Brendan O'Regan's mind was always switched on and ready to develop the next big project. However, when he was away from thinking about government policy and boardroom meetings, one of his passions in life was hunting. Brendan and his horse, Harry, were courageous on the track, as Geraldine and Declan recall.
They were just a great match for each other. But he really loved that horse. I mean, he He really did.
He was a fabulous horseman. He hunted once, twice a week when he could. He point-to-pointed. I unfortunately was in boarding school, never saw him win the cup that he won with the Scartines. Geraldine did.
He won the members' race with him at the Scartine point-to-point in 1972 at the age of 55.
It was a great occasion, and that cup was always with him wherever he was. I saw him ride in the point-to-point in Dromoland on numerous occasions, but I think he came in second. Was his best there. But he was very, very determined.
Occasionally, when he had time, he would go to the stable, put a halter and lead line on, and bring him along for the walk as he accompanied me down the long lane, down from the stables, down to where I'd get the bus. So I'd have my father and his horse accompanying me down that lane some mornings.
From point-to-point racing to industrialized revolution, expansion was in Brendan O'Regan's DNA. His next task was to turn green fields in Shannon into development.
Brendan was flying it at the time. There'd be no Shannon without Brendan O'Regan, let me say this first. Brendan was the man, and he fought tooth and nail for everything that he was ever got in Shannon.
That's Father Harry Bowen, who remembers that Brendan O'Regan always put people first.
All this development, the people were at the very heart of it. He rang me and he asked me to know, could I get involved? And with the social dimensions of all this development, what are the implications for people and so on and so on. So there's where I came in contact with him. He was an extraordinary man. Mind you, I paid a price. Sometimes he could ring you at 5 o'clock in the morning and say, Father Harry, I have an idea. I'll talk to you about it. So that was the kind of man he was. He got the idea. And there he was. So he was an extraordinary man. And it started with the airport, which led to the duty-free shop, which led to the industrial estate, and then to regional development, to Midwest region development, Clare, Limerick and North Tipperary. And that's where three economists and myself wrote the first economic plan for the Midwest region. And it was Brendan's vision as well that got that going.
My name is Paul Shane. I joined Shannon Development in 1980 as a fairly junior executive. I worked there initially helping to establish small and medium enterprises. Then I moved on to a direct role with the Shannon Free Zone. Not many people may be aware, but Brendan's work in Shannon actually shaped a number of developments all across the world. And notably, following a visit by Jing Zemin back in 1980, a man who was to become the president of China, it was actually the Shannon approach that was used as the basis for the Chinese International Industrialization Program, starting with the development of Shenzhen, a major industrial zone just on the edge of Hong Kong. Interestingly, particularly in the current political context, the Shannon approach was also adopted at a very early stage by Taiwan when it developed its first zone in Kaohsiung. Since then, through international industrial development consulting work, particularly through companies like Shannon International Development Consultancies, the approach has been introduced to many, many countries throughout, first of all, Eastern Europe, a lot of Africa, Middle East, Southeast Asia.
I'm Kevin Tomstone. I joined Shannon Development in the summer of 1985, and I actually joined as a member of the small industry team with responsibility for a portfolio of companies in the general industry sector. So essentially everything except electronics and engineering. And then, over time, worked in different parts of the company, moved into marketing, market research, then planning, strategy, became assistant chief executive in 92 and had responsibility for the economic activities, so industry, tourism, and so on. And then I served as CEO from 2000 to 2008. One of the things that keeps coming into my mind is he developed an ethos and, if you like, a value system about how to do economic development. And it's something that you know, I would have picked up on when I joined the company back in 85. And it had been developed in the people who were there before then and many who joined afterwards, and also people who since left the company. And that ethos was, just about development. Imagine a future. Others might think it's impossible, but figure out what you need to do in order to get there, and then start putting the pieces of the jigsaw together. So that was something that was like built into the culture, the DNA of the Shannon Development Organization. And Brendan, because of the way that he went about achieving what other people thought were impossible ideas and delivering them with a good team behind him, I think that's probably one of the biggest parts of his legacy. But that ethos of, you don't have to be in a capital city. You can be in a rural part of a country. You can be at the periphery of a country. But if you have a big enough vision, and if you've got a belief that you can assemble the parts to get you there, then you will achieve significant progress.
From a distant dream of O'Regan's to today's reality, Shannon Development today incorporates tourism, infrastructure and employment. It employs thousands of people from Shannon, Clare and the Midwest region and generates millions of euro into the local economy. The biggest employer in the region today is EI Electronics.
My name is Mick Ganee and I'm the founder and chief executive of EI Electronics in Shannon. Now, Brendan O'Regan's legacy is all around us in Shannon, no more so than in the Free Zone. Without his vision, the Shannon Free Zone, which employs over 10,000 people today, would not exist. His initiative in attracting US industry to Shannon led to the establishment of the Free Zone in 1959. And one of the first multinationals to locate here was General Electric, which established EI Company in 1963. And when GE announced the closure of EI in 1986, I led a management buyout which established today's EI Electronics Company in March 1988, employing 1,250 people, of which 1,100 are in Shannon. And if the Free Zone was never established and if GE had not set up, EI Electronics would never have happened. So you can say that EI Electronics is a living legacy of Brendan O'Regan. Yet the name of Brendan O'Regan is little known among the population, and this needs to be corrected. Well, the source of Brendan O'Regan's drive and ambition was his sense of Irishness, his determination to create jobs and save a generation from the social disruption of unemployment and immigration. His father reputedly told Brendan that the most important thing in life is to create work for others if he could. He certainly did that. And I would argue that his influence went wider than the Shannon region. His initiative in attracting US industry to Shannon was the catalyst for Sean Lamass opening up the Irish economy to foreign direct investment in the 60s. In any case, that man deserves to be honoured for his many achievements. And I'm delighted on behalf of EI Electronics to be one of the sponsors of the statue being built in his honour in the banks of the O'Garney River in Six Mile Bridge.
As Shannon Development expanded, Brendan quickly realised that staff working in the development and airport needed accommodation. It was upon Brendan to find a solution and to create Ireland's first planned town of the 20th century.
We visualised that it would grow, that it could grow to about 10,000 jobs. That was the aim. And that this would have to be backed up by the development of a town. We took part of the team that we had here with us to look at the English new towns and what they had done and so on, and how they had done them. We also had a look at the Swedish new towns, which were a different situation. They were high rise. I felt if we didn't start with something, we would never start. We took a risk, and the group that we had as a small group decided, all right, we'll build two timber buildings.
The town obviously was part of the vision as well. I used to disagree with him a bit on the idea of the town, that I felt that maybe the people growth could have been in Newmarket and Six Mile Bridge and Clare Castle and the villages around. But he had this idea about a new town, first new town in the Republic.
The Drumgealy flats were built at that time, and they were a short-term solution. But then it was clear that there was a necessity to build a much larger housing settlement, and the result of that was the first Shannon development plan. And the population was increasing gradually all the time.
The barriers to being able to do that are just immense. But he didn't see that. He just pushed his way through.
Brendan O'Regan has created a body of work that will never be surpassed. He dedicated his life to expanding Clare, and in particular, the Shannon region. Towards the end of the 1970s, Brendan O'Regan retired from Shannon Development, as Brian O'Connell recalls.
He stepped down as chairman in 78, but he did remain on as a director, I think, until about 1985. At the age that he would have stepped down, he was 60, so he was still relatively a young man. But things had changed. A lot of the things that he was passionately involved with in his earlier years, he was no longer very much involved with. For example, if you take tourism, he'd stepped down as chairman of Bord Fáilte in 1973. And then his own personal tourism interests, he had sold the Old Ground Hotel, the family had sold it to a public chain. The only thing he was then doing relating to tourism was using his role on the board of Shannon Development to promote things like the Rent an Irish Cottage scheme, which was part of his idea relating to industry and tourism. He had another body of work that at the back of his mind was becoming very important, and that was the peace process.
As walls were being erected in Shannon Town, nearly 400 kilometres away in Northern Ireland, walls of a different kind were also being built, as the troubles between Catholics and Protestants with opposing views on Northern Ireland and their relationship with Great Britain caused bloodshed. Hundreds and eventually thousands of people were killed in the troubles. Towards the late 70s, Brendan established Cooperation North, which would become the blueprint for peace and was one of the main instigators for bringing peace to Northern Ireland. As Carmel, Declan, Geraldine, Margaret and Andrew recall.
He was always coming up with ideas. He still had a vision that the island in Shannon, that they should build a peace centre on it. I can, you know, very late years seeing some sort of an architect's impression or an artist's impression that he had somebody draw up of what a peace centre on that island would look like.
I think that he saw that if there was peace in Ireland, there would be a lot more prosperity in Ireland. Because one of the things he said that we needed to work well with the British, he talked about the amount of tourists that were getting, that were going to England. We needed to tap into that potential so that the whole Ireland could grow and be more prosperous.
He spent the next 20 years working for peace. He believed in managed cooperation and people diplomacy. At first, the peace process in Northern Ireland, he became very involved in that, and Cooperation North and Cooperation Ireland. And later, a more global approach with the Irish Peace Institute. He loved connecting the dots. He saw a role for Shannon in all of this. He encouraged the Shannon Hotel School, which he had founded, to include peace studies in its curriculum, for example. Like, that's connecting the dots. He saw these wonderful young people who came from all over the world as potential peace ambassadors.
Peace is important to the world, you know. I mean, just the waste of war and people fighting and the suffering that it causes. And he had a very strong sense of a service, you know, and he wanted to help make the world a better place on a different, various levels for all the people around him. He had a strong sense of responsibility towards others. He was, you know, he cared a lot about people, and he had a genuine interest in people. And he also felt that he understood that life was very tough for a lot of people. And he also felt privileged in his own life and lucky and fortunate. And he felt a strong sense of responsibility to use his position and his own ability to try to make things better. And I just think the peace thing, the war thing is just, was so, to him, it was just so wrong. and he needed to do whatever he could do to support peace building.
When he got involved was kind of 77, 78, 79, and the establishment of Cooperation North, it was originally called. There was some disquiet in the North that it might be called Cooperation North-South, or might be called Cooperation Ireland, or any such. But by that time, by the late 70s, the expectations of tourism growth and industry growth and inward direct investment and increasing tourism numbers year on year had fallen. A generation's work seemed to be being undone. I think that was certainly part of what he felt. You know, lots of us sit on the ditch. He really wasn't one for that. So this was, what could he do? How could he lever his connections and so on to make these arguments and to try to garner some support around it, particularly and inevitably enough in the kind of business community and the semi-state community.
That was Brendan's family speaking about their father's quest for peace. Retirement for Brendan was just a word. He remained active and always thinking of the future.
He just didn't stop. He couldn't stop. There had to be, in order to live, he had to have a purpose. And you know, he had to keep wanting to do things. He had a wonderful secretary or PA, whatever, at the time, Pauline Taylor, who unfortunately is no longer alive. An absolutely lovely, lovely person. She rang him every single solitary day. She would get his post, she would read it, she would ring him, and they would go through it together. He never stopped working.
Brendan O'Regan had dreams, and he made them a reality with his determination, drive, and ambition. He did this to make a better life and a future for our people that they could be proud of. Upon Brendan O'Regan's death in February 2008, he was lauded as an innovator, visionary, and an ambassador of peace who worked tirelessly to make a better life for people in Clare and beyond. He changed business practices, staff relations, and altered the world of aviation.
Take a spot in Shannon, you know, just go to Drumgealy. And, you know, go to the top floor, one of the apartment blocks there. And if you want to put Brendan's legacy in perspective, just imagine you're standing on top of the Drumgealy apartments and you're doing a 360 degree view around you. And what are you going to see? You're going to see, looking out west on the far side of the estuary, Foynes. But that's where Brendan's work would have started, what became sales and catering across the river on the northern shore, and what became Shannon Airport, the world's first duty-free shop. Then you move to the Shannon Free Zone, the world's first industrial export processing zone. And in standing on top of the Drumgealy apartments, you're standing in the first buildings that became the first residential places for people who came to work in the Shannon Free Zone. And you can look again out towards 6 Mile Bridge and you see Bunratty in the distance, Castle Folk Park, attracting hundreds of thousands of visitors to this day. If you think of it just in those terms, just that 360 degree view of the surrounding landscape and the impact that his projects have made, that's one level. And then you think nationally, the impact that he had through his role with Bord Fáilte and a long-serving board member there, the impact that the initiatives that started in Shannon had when they were extended to the rest of the country. And then you see international impact through the work that he started through using Shannon's experience to help, for example, in Taiwan, Kaohsiung, Indonesia, different parts of the world, them also to generate economic activity. And then, of course, there's the International Cooperation Center and his legacy for peace. Those few examples that I've mentioned there, I think, give you an insight into why so many people would have felt that Brendan rightly was selected as the most significant person from County Clare for many, many years.
This year, 6 Mile Bridge Historical Society, in partnership with Shannon Chamber of Commerce, commissioned a life-size statue of Dr. Brendan O'Regan to commemorate his legacy. Fundraising for this initiative was spearheaded by Chamber CEO Helen Downes, who enlisted a number of key businesses and personnel to support the project. The result will mean a permanent structure of O'Regan in his hometown. Speaking here is Seamus Connolly, portrait sculptor of the O'Regan statue.
What we're looking here is the original clay statue that I make first off Dr. Brendan O'Regan. What we start off with is a steel frame, and then there's mesh, and then we keep on adding clay onto that until eventually we refine it, refine it until eventually there's the finished statue. I've kind of set him sometime in the kind of 60s, perhaps, the 1960s. He's wearing a suit, but he was always and ever in a suit. He was always fabulously dressed, and he's about 6 foot tall. He wasn't probably 6 foot tall in real life, but I just raised up a little bit because just a little bit of extra oomph on a public monument. It'll weigh a couple of hundred kilos, but that's all it weighs. It's a hollow statue, it's hollow bronze. Nearly all the statues that I do are people that are hugely important to the area that he's coming in. And, you know, they're generally sporting, you know, very, very generally, well, they mostly have been sporting, except for John F. Kennedy, which I did as well. And it's important for me because it's a big statue in Clare. That's really important. You know, it's my own home county. He's someone who's really important. He's someone, in a mad coincidence, worked with my grandfather at one period in his life. He was worked in Foynes on the flying boats, and my grandfather was the radio officer bringing in the planes, as it happens. That's where my dad was born, in Foynes. So I assume they knew each other. The teams were very small, so I assume the two of them knew each other at one point. So that was a nice little connection as well. Yeah, I'm very proud of this piece, hoping the people of Six Mile Bridge will be, of course, happy as well.
Today, we stand in Six Mile Bridge, the birthplace of Brendan O'Regan, as we look at his new statue that has been erected to remember Clare's greatest ever person.
He'd be absolutely thrilled, no matter what accolades he got. The ones that mattered most to him were the ones from Clare, without a shadow of a doubt.
I think he'd be humbled by it. It's where he came from. He had many great times there. Many great stories were told about, you know, about his time growing up there. I think he just loved it, loved the bridge. He enjoyed being a bridge man.
He would be very grateful and appreciative of his hometown that they had so generously thought about him in this way, for sure.
It's a wonderful honor for my father, for us, for him to be honored in this way. It really is great. And for his grandchildren to be coming to witness this also. They've heard, they know him, they knew him in small ways, but they've learned a lot about him and know a lot about him from this many stories that they hear. And it's a wonderful honor.
Now, he's had a lot of various accolades and recognitions and awards in both internationally, nationally, regionally, wider county, and so on. But I think this for him is so local, and the fact that it has been a lot of people have come together to support it, but some of the driving force has been within the community. And his first concern would be that the community was happy with it. He might hold this one dearest of all the recognitions for that.
When I was told by one of the principal civil servants, when the jets come, you'll have 1,000 people redundant. And there'll be 1,000 redundant at the airport. I remember saying something like this to my father, and he said, the most important thing in life is to create work for others, if you can. And I know that comment had a lot to do with the industrial zone decision, that I was thinking in terms, first of all, of employing some of the 1,000 that were threatened with redundancy.